Folks, welcome back to Off the Bench. I'm Brandon Carney alongside Pat Gustafson, and we have football this week. Not only do we have football, Pat, you and I have fantasy teams set, ready to rock, ready to go.
Unfortunately, depending on who you ask, but...
Yeah, your draft, we'll start here, guys, just to give you a little recap of how our draft went, so you guys know what to keep up with throughout the season, because we'll be referencing our teams in this one specific league all year long. Pat decided to do something that he talked about here and there over the course of the pod and go essentially zero RB. So we went with the receivers back-to-back, rounds one and two, and then rounds three and four went receiver and tight end. When did you take your first running back? Was it in
five,
the fifth?
Five, six.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the funniest part was I didn't take any more running backs in 7-8. I didn't take a running back either there.
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting strategy there by Pat. I mean, look, we've seen zero RB work plenty of times for a lot of people, but Pat just kind of suffered from the fact that in the non-PPR league, people are, dare I say, horny for the running back. So they all go incredibly early. Like anybody that you think you could get as your running backs in the sixth or seventh round as a zero RB drafter, they were not there in our draft. Like, Pat, you had to settle for what? Pacheco and Montgomery, I believe it was.
Yeah, which isn't, I guess, ideal, but at the same time, it isn't the worst. Like, I feel like it could be worse. But my problem was, like you said, with the running backs going, and my big problem was just that I have picking at the turn, you know, I've got to go 22 picks in between everything. And I guess I would say that, it would have been easier if I was picking closer together. But then I'd also think that I wouldn't have had to do that strategy if I was picking further apart. That was my problem every time it came around, was that I felt it would have been a reach on any running back. You know, like in the first round, like I was thinking, like I could take Aaron Jones at 13. I'm just like, in non-PPR, I didn't want to do that. And then around the 3-4 turn, I was looking at like, I could take Cam Akers right now, but I don't want to do that. And the way I saw it, so was I loaded up on everything else. And it's going to be a season. It's going to be fun. I'm going to say I'm honestly looking forward to it the most, because it's going to be the biggest challenge I've had from the offset, in terms of just trying to find that waiver hero or just trying to go week to week and just piece a team together. Because besides that, I love my starting lineup, but that's a big thing. That's a big deal to not, you know, to have a whole position be completely in flux. So, but you know, it is what it is. It happened. And I'm ready. I'm ready to go, Bran. Your team was certainly more balanced than mine. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I'm very, very happy with how my team ended up. Last year, I felt like I was getting sniped at every possible turn for every running back I could have wanted. And look, I'd be lying to you if I said I was sitting here with more than, you know, maybe 2.5 running backs that I actually feel good about. But at least I feel good about those two and then maybe half running backs. I felt like, you know, things went, not to say they went according to plan, because running backs still flew off the board even harder than I could have imagined.
I'm shocked at some of the picks that were made. Shocked.
Yeah, I mean, guys, just to give you a reference, I mean, we had, like, James Conner go in the third round. So any concept of him being a value because of the volume that he's going to have this year is essentially out the window.
And Travis Etienne went at 15? Same guy took them both. Same guy took them both. Both of the picks, I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
Not only because I'm like running backs are falling, but just those were individual cringes.
Yeah, Austin in his first year in our league is definitely making some headlines here early on. But no, I got a lot of guys that I was very, very high on. I don't feel like I'm like, you know, sad that I missed out on any particular player. Just to run down the roster real quick, I'll go through mine, then I'll go through Pat's. I ended up with Justin Fields, Nick Chubb, starting Raheem Mostert week one because of, you know, the injuries, but James Cook will generally be the RB2. A.J. Brown, Calvin Ridley, Sam Laporta / Juwan Johnson at tight end. I punted that position, which history has told me has gone pretty well for me. Last year, I spent an early pick on a tight end. We all know how the fuck well that went.
Who was that, Brandon?
Shut up. The guy that I'm facing week one, I'm going to off myself if he goes for more than 5 points.
My man's going for 102 touchdowns. Easy.
Bro. All right. And then we've got Jahan Dotson in the flex, Commanders D for week one, Cameron Dicker. Bench, we've got, like I said, James Cook, Jordan Addison, JSN, Nico Collins, Juwan, Ty Chandler, Sean Tucker. So, look, I think I've got depth. I'm very excited about things. Justin Fields was not a guy I planned on getting at all, but I figured he'd be gone, you know, in the second or third just because of the hype alone, and that's just kind of the precedent that's been set in our league. But when I saw him sitting there in the fourth, and like I said, every running back that I've taken in any mock was gone in the fourth, I was like, screw it. Let me get the guy that I think is probably the highest upside quarterback outside of, you know, the big three. So I went with Justin Fields there. And then for Pat's squad here, Pat actually got the quarterback that I thought would end up being my quarterback, a very nice man who I had the pleasure to meet, Trevor Lawrence. Running backs Pacheco and Montgomery. Then this is where the zero RB becomes very clear that that was the strategy, because the receivers and tight end are loaded. We've got Tyreek Hill, Stephon Diggs, Mark Andrews, Devonta Smith. Then we got the Broncos D and Graham Gano. On the bench, Chris Godwin, Elijah Mitchell, Tank Bigsby, Deion Jackson, Rashad Bateman, Michael Wilson, and Isaiah Likely. What are you
I didn't draft
at?
Isaiah Likely, though.
That is true.
I'm actually pulling up right now to drop Isaiah Likely, because the only reason I picked him up was because Mark Andrews kind of had a thing going on, but it's like, he's going to play, but just in case he didn't, but he's back at practice, so I'm actually now pulling up my team to drop Isaiah Likely, and you guys are going to get a live pickup here.
Yeah, he should be good to go. Go ahead.
But like I was saying, you kind of – I really like, even with Pacheco and Montgomery, like, I'm still cool with my starting lineup, but I said this the night of the draft, my biggest regret about it was just the fact that when I could have been getting great values, guys like Drake London fell like two rounds too far, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But I just couldn't do it at that point because I already had four wide receivers that I liked that could be played every week, and I needed to start taking shots on running backs. So I'm taking clowns like Elijah Mitchell and Tank Bigsby, of all people, when I'm missing great values. So, like, I like the starting lineup. I love Godwin. But then the rest of my bench is just awful. Awful.
Look, you got some dart throws there. You got some dart throws there that, as a zero RB drafter, like Tank Bigsby and Deion Jackson, I do like. I mean, Jackson's value is probably, you know, hanging on by a thread here. It'll probably be very temporary. But Bigsby's a guy that I could see ending up in your lineup here, you know, a couple weeks in, and you being pretty happy about it. So I don't mind the running back dart throws.
And Mitchell is strictly based on Christian McCaffrey's health, with outside of last year, is a fair bet. It's a fair gamble to take. And, I mean, he does have some standalone, not enough standalone to start on a weekly basis, but fuck if I know.
Yeah, no, I'm very happy with how the draft went, and, you know, just excited to see how this year plays out. And I think any guys that I did get sniped on were more so like bench guys. Like, you know, I was planning to take Tank Bigsby, you got him. I wanted Antonio Gibson, he got taken a pick before me. But as far as my core players, like, I got Calvin Ridley. I got my boy Nick Chubb that I did not think I was going to end up getting at six in a non-PPR league. Got A.J. Brown to kind of lock down that receiver room. So I'm very happy. We will get the season underway. But, Pat, you are making a stank face.
I'm looking at the available free agents in our league.
Oh, they're brutal. What do you mean? It's week one. Of course they're bad.
Oh, God. Like, I just might keep Isaiah Likely for the hell of it. Like,
top projected free agent right now is Marvin Mims. And, I mean, he's probably worth the snag. But, like, after that, you've got Curtis Samuel, Zay Jones, Marvin Jones, just guys that don't get the loins tingling, if you know what I'm saying.
I'm honestly looking at defenses for next week, honestly.
That's totally fair. All right, let's get off of our league. Guys, you will be getting plenty of updates on our league throughout the year, obviously. But, you know, let's get off our league and get into more of a generalized news and reactions, because, boy, do we have a lot of it. So, if this isn't the pinnacle of fantasy football... Actually, hold on, let me hit this
first. Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Can't waste the assets. If this isn't the pinnacle of just what fantasy football is, we get a random news drop because of a practice injury that Travis Kelce hyperextended his knee, and his status for Thursday is in doubt. We got a notification a couple minutes before we hopped on here that he is officially listed questionable, so there is a chance. They don't believe it's a long-term injury, so it could be a situation where, if anything, he just misses week one, and then they've got, you know, the long layoff, 10 days until their next game. But I mean, of course, Pat, right? Like, the one guy who is looked at as, like, bulletproof, you know, the best positional advantage in fantasy football, and immediately the fantasy gods are like, you fucking thought, buddy.
Well, that's the whole thing. That's been so much of the appeal of Kelce, is that he's avoided a major injury for his whole career, and that he's such a slam dunk. Like, you wouldn't be taking a tight end in the first round, and you're not going to do that unless it's a slam dunk. And like they say, the best ability is availability, and the guy's always available. So this is terrible. I mean, I'm a Kelce owner in one league. And it's a dynasty league. So the problem is all my backup tight ends are just hilarious. You know, it's like Jake Ferguson and Trey McBride, like guys who you are not gonna start this week.
You could start Fergie if you were desperate.
You probably could, but there are better options. And obviously, I guess that comes to the question now, where it's like, what do we do? Like, what do you do if you're a Travis Kelce owner?
Yeah, I mean, so you've got that meme that's like, step one, lay down. Step two, try not to cry. Step three, cry a lot. Yeah. That's kind of where you're at if you have Travis Kelce and he's out. Pat, I mean, it's a matter of who's available on your waiver wire. I think there are guys, especially in 10-teamers, like, you've probably got Sam Laporta sitting out there for some people. You've probably got Juwan Johnson. I own both those guys sitting out there for some people. So there are guys out there that are decent options. I personally am not, if I'm a Kelce owner, I'm not going the Noah Gray route if it comes down to it. It's just their offense is not, it goes without saying that he's not a one-for-one replacement, but like, it's not like there's going to be all these plays drawn up for Travis Kelce and then they're just going to go to Noah Gray. Like, you're picking up a tight end to replace Travis Kelce just because he's getting the opportunity that you think Kelce obviously would have had, and you're hoping that he replaces him. I think I'd go another team here. I'm not going the Chiefs replacement route. I'm going to just look for, you know, a guy who is projected for a lot of snaps, going to see a lot of playing time. Don't know how I would feel about a guy like Greg Dulcich, but I think there are good options out there that are going to get a high snap count, like Chig or Juwan or Laporta. That's the route I'm going, just guys who are going to see the field a good amount. So it'll depend on who's available on your wire, but that's how I'm approaching it.
Yeah, agreed with Gray. Honestly, like, if you have the roster capability, Kelce owner or not, to pick up Noah Gray, do it. Do it. Why not? That's honestly who I may end up picking up in my free roster spot here, but... Yeah, it's tough because you look at it, it's like, oh, the Kansas City targets the tight ends more than anyone in the league. Well, it's like, well, no shit. Like,
they target Travis Kelce.
That's not because of their offense. That's not because of their scheme. It's because they have Travis Kelce, arguably the greatest tight end ever. And no, great. Obviously, we've never seen anything from him because we've never had to. So you should not start Noah Gray unless you're really desperate. But again, you shouldn't be unless you're in like a 16-man league. Then you might be in a little more trouble. But even then, I don't think I'd do it. But if you have the capability to pick him up and see how this goes, do it. You know, I was looking at ESPN availability. Another guy I really like, especially this week, is Gerald Everett, who is available in about 50% of ESPN leagues. Just because, definitely the highest floor of any guy, especially in a PPR league. Everett seems like he's good for 5 catches every single week, even in a Chargers offense with a lot of good targets. And we'll talk about that game later, but I think there are just going to be an inordinate amount of points scored in that game. And give me all the pieces possible. And I guess Gerald Everett's a good one. But yeah, I went Juwan Johnson in a league where I had Kelce, just because at that point too, you're looking for either, you know, like floor or a guy who's going to score a touchdown. And that's Johnson is just basically like, hey, I hope this guy scores a touchdown. And if he doesn't, well, but
welcome to every tight end in the league at that point. So
it's just like it just sucks. It just sucks so bad. Like, honestly, like, probably one of the last guys in terms of fantasy that you would want to get hurt. Just from the perspective that this guy, like, one of the most dominant players at his position ever, probably in terms of fantasy. And I hope it's only a week or two. Like I said, even though I'm not a invested owner, but that's just like a kick in the nuts.
And the problem too with Kelce is, like, you know, obviously you don't want your RB1 or your wide receiver 1 to go down, but if they do, at least you probably have a replacement option on your bench of some sort, because you draft depth for those positions. Tight end, if you draft Travis Kelce, it's like drafting an elite quarterback. You presume that you're good.
Yeah, you don't.
And you don't draft a backup. And if you do, it is late, 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 and they are bad, bad, bad. Yeah. So Kelce owners are down bad. We'll see if he ends up playing this Thursday night. But if not, I feel for you guys. Pat, let's just keep with the injury theme here before we get to some contract news here. Cooper Kupp had an injury that popped up basically right before the biggest draft weekend of the year. In our league, it was not reflected in his ADP or in his where he was picked at all. He ended up just going about 16th or 17th overall, something like that, in the second round. I think whoever took him, truthfully, Pat, didn't realize that there was a new injury. It was our buddy Mike.
It was Mike, so yeah, I would bet on not that.
Not as plugged in. He does have Ja'Marr Chase and Cooper Kupp now, so if Cooper Kupp ends up being healthy,
that's terrifying
for the rest of us. Yeah, but Cooper Kupp suffered a setback in recovery from his hamstring injury. He met with a specialist in Minnesota. That is the last we have heard about it thus far. So we don't know anything yet. The prevailing thought is that he is, you know, definitely at risk for week one. And then it's murky beyond that. We don't have any reason to believe it's serious enough to be a season ender or anything like that right now. But this could be a case where we see him anytime from week two or as late as week six. And so, look, if you haven't drafted yet, I was planning on not touching the guy. I didn't really even have to make that choice, like I said, because he ended up going so early. But Cooper Kupp, man, it just does not feel like this is a good situation. This feels like bad vibes, and it just goes with the overall bad vibes that the Rams already had.
Yeah, and I did draft Cooper Kupp with the sixth pick the night before this news came out, which was what I said, that we need to wait until like week four to do the draft next year in that league. I said that's the only fair thing to do, but I'm very worried. I'm very worried just because there's that quote from Sean McVay that really stands out where it said, we're not waiting for him to get to be able to play. It's to get back to his regular ability, which is very high.
Right.
So like, yeah. Which is very high. Like, so it seems like they're going to be really careful with him. And to be honest, they should be. They're not going to be very good. I mean, I think they'll be okay at best, but they're not a team that's going to be readily, you know, ready to compete right away. So why would you risk Cooper Kupp for the whole season? So I would like to think that, well, not like to think, but I'm inclined to think that this is probably going to be like 3 or 4 weeks maybe.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think we're going to see him week one and then onwards. And the other thing, stay away from Rams wide receivers. I mean, again,
yeah,
or at
yeah.
least stay away from them in terms of putting them in your lineup. Like, if you want to go pick up Van Jefferson, if you want to go pick up Tutu Atwell, what's the guy's name? Puka Nacua?
If you want to go
pick him up, but for the love of God, do not look to replace Cooper Kupp in your starting lineup this week with any of those guys. But again,
yeah,
if you want to just sit back and see what happens, sure, but that's a gross, gross offense. And I mean, there's not a lot of viability on that team right now besides Cam Akers. And then Tyler Higbee's a pretty reliable, especially PPR tight end there with a good floor. But it's gross. It's gross. He was the diamond in the rough there. And it's gross now.
It's gross out here. Van Jefferson has been a guy, you know, we've talked about a couple weeks ago that we've just kind of always hoped for and expected more from. And look, he's going to have this opportunity again. Will he do anything with it? I don't know. If I'm taking any gamble as a result of this Cooper Kupp injury, it is Puka Nacua. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that somewhat right. Just with the camp hype, I mean, hell, take a dart throw on him. Now he's got an actual path to playing time on top of that hype. You know, pick him up, see what happens. Why not? Especially if you went heavy running back and, you know, need some receiver dart throws, which feels like nobody did that. It feels like people either went heavy receiver or just balanced. But that's how I'm approaching it. And then Higbee's a guy that, you know, maybe is more likely to give you a few points here now. He could be a Kelce replacement option. It's just Higbee's,
yes.
Pat, he's just so mid. He's just such a mid football player. And it's like, he is
That's
purely...
That's okay sometimes, though.
It is okay sometimes. I feel icky when I have to start guys like that. Because it's like, if you put them out there and then they don't produce, it's like, well, I knew that. I knew he wasn't good. But you're just hoping for the opportunity to kind of outweigh it. So we will see with Cooper Kupp when we end up seeing him again. Again, I feel like most leagues I would hope have drafted by now, considering we are recording this podcast a day before the NFL season starts. You do? I actually have one tonight as well.
That's why we're doing this at 4 o'clock, because I've got one tonight.
I've got one tonight, a Bench Mob viewer league, longtime viewer league, so don't be offended if you're listening / watching and not invited. But that is the Cooper Kupp. I know. That's the Cooper Kupp injury update. And then, Pat, some other unexpected one. Let's go down here to Jeff Wilson. This one, so there was kind of a dark cloud surrounding Jeff Wilson for maybe a week or two. We just kind of knew he was banged up. And then, boom, thrown on IR. We did not really see it coming.
I did.
This is what prompted me to draft Raheem Mostert, you know, not early, but at a decent pick. And I am going to be comfortably starting him this week in what you already mentioned should be a shootout between the Chargers and the Dolphins. Look, Mostert's a 31-year-old running back who has been injury-prone his entire career. He is not a guy who's going to be, you know, a season-long monster like this. But the reports about Jeff Wilson did not sound overly positive. Mike McDaniel said, "I would not be surprised if we saw him before the end of the season." That casted doubt that nobody was thinking that he wasn't going to come back before the season. But now you say that, and it's like, oh, so you... There's actually is a chance that he doesn't come back before the season. Then that you felt the need to specify... You don't believe that'll be the case. It's bad news. So Raheem Mostert, I think, will be a super viable play here for the first few weeks, but gives nice little light to our boy Devon Achain here, who we've, again, flipped 180 again. I mean, it's gone from hype
to
this.
Flipped all the way back.
Yeah.
All the way back.
This has gone from underrated to overrated back to underrated, I think. And Devon Achain is a guy who could be a real, real difference maker here in the next couple of weeks if Raheem Mostert were to get injured, or even if not,
to
be a two-headed monster.
Like, think about it like this. So, like, say even Jeff Wilson misses the minimum three games. Say he comes back ready to go. Achain has a real chance to establish himself in those 3 weeks. Because, like you said, Raheem Mostert's old. He's oft injured. But even if he doesn't get injured, Mostert has never been a prolific pass catcher in his career. And this is a chance for Achain to get in there, especially, say, in a game that's a shootout, where, you know, you're not going to be in these traditional situations where a guy like Mostert would perform the best in. So even if it's a case where it is going to be a committee, but there's a good chance that it could be Mostert and Achain moving forward, or if Jeff Wilson comes back, it could be more of a Jeff Wilson and Achain. But I think either way, this is like the best case scenario for him, even if it's only the minimum amount of time. But like you said, it's been very, like, they finally, it was all undisclosed, but it's like a midsection, it's his hand. Like, it just doesn't sound good, especially the fact they've been so coy about it. So if you got Achain late, if you went zero RB like me and snagged Devon Achain late, obviously it's not going to help you in these early weeks. Raheem Mostert will. That's what I drafted in Mostert. We were on a Discord call, and I said, all right, I'm going to draft the Dolphins RB1 when Jeff Wilson goes on IR. And I drafted Mostert next day, IR. So I got Kupp, I got Mostert, so it balanced out. Also have George Kittle on that team, yikes. But so it's been a week, but yeah, Mostert will definitely be one of those guys that will help you in those first few weeks. But Achain, long-term, let's go, all aboard.
Yeah, Achain, a guy that we were a little down on after the shoulder injury, you know, assuming that if a rookie's going to miss some time and he's already a little buried on the depth chart, that is not a good combination. But now he is practicing, he seems like he's good to go, and he finds himself, you know, second on the depth chart. Miles Gaskin is off to Minnesota, Savon Ahmed is lurking somewhere, but it seems like Devon Achain will hopefully be second in line for touches here while Wilson is out. And Wilson could be out for a long time. It would not surprise me if Devon Achain took over this backfield sooner than later. Pat, you just mentioned George Kittle. He's got an injury. Another one that kind of popped up out of nowhere. But again, George Kittle injuries tend to do that. He's dealing with a groin problem. Status for week one is in question. I don't have much to say about this other than welcome back to being a George Kittle owner. This is kind of just what happens. And another good reason, in my opinion, to not spend a super early pick on a tight end. You know, it's a lot of question marks, man, and you can just find you're better off just playing the desolate wasteland game, I feel like, unless you really hit it big with one of these, you know, like Darren Waller or TJ Hawkinson types. Kittle, injured, may not play week one.
Seems like similar, he's not going to play week one.
It doesn't seem great. Similar replacement options. I mean, the same replacement options that we just mentioned for Kelce. Yep. If any of those guys are out there, go get them. Do not start Ross Dwelly.
Even though we've seen Ross Dwelly have a couple of... Is he? Yeah, is it still?
I think it is. I'm pretty sure. I think he scored at the preseason game I was actually at. Breaking news coming in here. Cooper Kupp and Stetson Bennett are out for Sunday's game, and Sean McVay said there is a possibility that the Rams put Cooper Kupp on IR. There you go.
I've got my finger on the injury pulse here, man.
Pat is ready. He is watching. But yeah, the Kittle injury, it's not looking great for him week one.
But Brandon Ayuk. I've been on board all offseason, like many people have, and
yeah,
let's keep rolling.
Brandon Ayuk to the moon, and Christian McCaffrey, if you are a DFS player, you got to assume that when these kind of injuries happen, things are going to go through him even more than they normally do.
Yeah, obviously, those kind of dump-off kind of plays. Yeah. Short yardage, absolutely.
Some concern, some warranted concern about Elijah Mitchell taking some work on the ground, because in the games that he was healthy, he did do that. But in a game like this especially, you can pretty much bank on a big workload for Christian McCaffrey. So don't feel bad about building your DFS lineup around him. And if you have him in season long, enjoy week one, because it should be a pretty good one. Pat, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, this one surprised me in the other direction. He's expected to play week one. I got him at a pretty nice value in our league.
Yes,
he tumbled about two rounds. He won't be sniffing my starting lineup this week, but nice to see that he will be out there week one in some capacity, you know, get those reps under his belt. And good for the Seahawks, good for Geno Smith for sure. So if you are a JSN owner, you know, breathe a little sigh of relief. We got some good injury news here for once. So he is expected to be out there. And, Pat, we've got some contract news. Nick Bosa
becomes
the highest paid defensive player in NFL history. 5 years, $170 million, $122.5 million guaranteed. Well deserved. I mean, the guy is a menace on the defensive end. Originally, this topic was in our show sheet as Nick Bosa may not play week one because of a contract dispute, but seems like it is resolved. I assume this means he'll be out there week one now, even though he was not in the building today. Big for the 49ers and good for Nick Bosa.
Yeah, again, I saw a tweet where it was like 49ers owed money like next year. They're going to have some problems. They are going to have some serious problems with him and Trent Williams and McCaffrey and Fred Warner. But these are all great players who deserve all this money.
Good problem to have.
I mean, you know, obviously everyone knows the game of restructures and pushing money off and all that, so they may be able to get around it, but that's the only reason I could have seen the last week or so, like, why they're not giving Nick Bosa this money. As, like, I saw a report where they said, like, 28 of the 31 other teams are willing to pay him what he wants. And it's like, yes. It is like, that is a correct thing to do. Like,
100%.
He is absolutely worth that money. So huge for the 49ers and what should be a really good team again. Especially the defense.
Yeah, I mean, game wrecker on defense. He's a guy that is kind of the crux of how the 49ers build their team, right? Like, they go out and have, you know, game manager Brock Purdy surrounded by weapons, but the defense is really the calling card of the 49ers. Without an elite defense, I don't know what this team does. It's certainly not finding itself in all these NFC championship games and even a Super Bowl in recent memory. So definitely a big one for them to keep Nick Bosa around. I don't know, like you said, how the money is going to play out in you know, next year and the year after, but that is a future problem for the 49ers. For now, they get to field an elite team again and probably be favored to hit that NFC title game once again. Pat, a guy who has not been paid.
Oh, go ahead. Want to talk about Chris Jones for a second, because the live podcast, I need to step away for a minute.
Oh, yeah,
I'll be right back.
You are fine. So Chris Jones did not get paid like Nick Bosa did. So this is massive for the Chiefs. I mean, this has kind of just been something that has hung over our heads through the course of the preseason and the offseason. I feel like maybe because he's not a fantasy relevant player, people haven't like talked about it as much or been as concerned about his absence. But when it comes to real NFL football and the impact that he has on the field, I mean, this is as big of a holdout as you can possibly get, because this is the anchor of that Chiefs defense. And, you know, you look at even week one specifically, if the Chiefs end up being without Travis Kelce, the best player on their offense, other than the quarterback, of course, and without Chris Jones on the defense, I do think Kansas City is really in trouble here. I think the Detroit Lions are going to be licking their chops a little bit, knowing that the Chiefs are far less than full strength. So Chris Jones, not been paid. We will see if he ends up getting paid. I don't know really what more he has to do. The thinking was that the Tyreek Hill trade was kind of a precursor to this happening. So the fact that he hasn't been paid yet, you know, it's concerning. And I don't know if there's a trade in the future or what might happen with Chris Jones, but not paid, and as of right now, not slated to play week one. Pat, welcome back. Kind of just went through a little Chris Jones rant, but we can get into our division predictions now.
Sure,
Go ahead.
And I'm shocked this is the first time that this has ever happened, that I've had to step away from the podcast to take a piss, because, like, I went literally a half hour ago before we started, and I'm sitting here. No way I make it another hour, so
For those of you watching
live with us, a podcast milestone that you'd think we would have reached by now, but here we are. But yeah, I'm sure Chris Jones, there are a lot. All I can say about Chris Jones is he's probably the best defender in football not named Nick Bosa, and they are a lot better with him than they are without him, and they should pay him that money, and good on him. for sticking it out.
Yeah, and before we hop into our division predictions, actually, so there are some injuries with the Packers as well. Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs, both with hamstring injuries, both on the injury report right now. That coming out today, so the Packers could very well be undermanned week one. I don't know the severity of either of these injuries just yet, but fire up your Samori Torres, maybe.
Oh, dear.
I don't know. It's bad news for the Packers if those guys don't play. And then just go through everything else. Let's see what we've got. Cardinals injury report has Zach Ertz with a knee, Hollywood Brown with a hamstring. Again, don't have any reason to believe these are major issues just yet, but just something to keep
Michael
an eye on.
Michael Wilson,
your boy. All right, before the season kicks off, we do feel that we should get our division predictions out there so you guys can properly roast us or praise us. Pat, we have a lot of similar picks, and I've honestly found that I have a lot of similar. There's almost a consensus on a lot of these division picks this year, which makes me
nervous.
Seems
too easy. Yeah.
I hate it. Like, everybody thinks, you know, the Jags are going to win the AFC South, and everybody thinks the Eagles are going to win the NFC East, and the 49ers are going to win the West. And it's like, yes, obviously on paper, these are the best teams in those divisions, but it's like, oh, I cannot see everybody just going 6-8 or 7-8 in their division predictions come season end. But we'll go through ours first and foremost, Pat. We've got the AFC East. You and I on the same page here. We both got the Buffalo Bills. What was your thinking here?
I mean, it's the Buffalo Bills. You know, they've got a strong defense. But obviously that division is going to be a lot better, assuming the Jets get better, which I'm not really on board with. And then Miami, who I actually had originally put down when we did this. I originally
really?
Put down the Dolphins to win this division, but kind of came to my senses. I mean, they've been so good under Sean McDermott, and not much has changed. Josh Allen, and, you know, if they even can get things out of James Cook and Dalton Kincaid. But from a fantasy perspective, but I think what they have on offense is really going to work from a football perspective. And I just have no reason to believe that they're going to give up that crown, though I do like the Dolphins very, very much.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, Pat, the Dolphins weren't super on my radar to win this division, although with a healthy Tua, I suppose they should be. The Jalen Ramsey injury just kind of turned me off of picking them to win the division. I think they'll still be in the wild card mix for sure. This was about me not really, again, believing in the Jets, much like you. I think they'll be good, and the Jets I actually do have as a projected wildcard team, which we'll talk about in a little bit, but I just think when it comes to actually winning the division, you're asking for a lot of moving parts to come together really quickly, and I know that it's, you know, familiar parts for Aaron Rodgers. He's back with Nathaniel Hackett. He's got Lazard and Cobb to play with, all this stuff, but at the end of the day, I think you've got a shaky offensive line that's trying to protect a quarterback who turns 40 this year, and that alone is enough for me to say I'm not picking against the team that's won the division for 3 straight years and won 13 games last year and has a very similar roster with an arguably improved offensive line. The only difference for the Bills right now is that they do not have Von Miller, but it sounds like Von was pretty close to not going on IR if you read the quote from him. So I think the Bills are going to hold on to this division again. I think the Jets will be good, but you know the Jets have a very tough schedule to open up the year, especially the defenses that they play. I mean, you've got the Bills, then they've got the Dallas Cowboys, the Patriots, then the Chiefs. I mean, the Chiefs defense, especially if Chris Jones isn't there, may not be super scary, but then you've got the Broncos and the Eagles. That's a lot of really good defenses for, again, an offense that's trying to mesh for the first time to try and overcome. So it's going to be tough, and I think the Bills will just come out on top here. But again, going to be a competitive division. I'm hoping that my Patriots just are competitive themselves because I don't think there's going to be a lot to be excited for here. I just hope they're more fun to watch. Okay, the AFC North, Pat, we actually differ here. You've got the Cincinnati Bengals running it back again. I'm going with the Baltimore Ravens. I think the Baltimore Ravens are a team that talent-wise and coaching-wise and just everything, they have not a healthy version of this team is not that far behind the Bengals to begin with. We saw the Tyler Huntley-led Ravens almost knock off the Bengals in the playoffs. So what can they do if everybody's actually healthy? I am choosing to bet on Lamar Jackson being healthy this year, being over this leg injury, and taking these new weapons he has on offense, getting to new heights, you know, new offensive coordinator. I'm choosing to be optimistic with Todd Monken, who is going to open things up in the passing game more for this offense for sure. Will it affect the run game negatively? I'm not sure. That's one thing that Greg Roman did well up until he left. So, you know, the offense is going to have a different identity. They're going to run 3 wide a lot more than they did last year. I just think, you know, if there was one division where I wanted to go and not just pick the defending champion, it was this one because I am a big, big believer in the Ravens, and I would not be surprised to see them take this crown.
Yeah, that was my big problem, really, looking at the AFC in particular, thinking I'm like, I just don't want to – there's nowhere where I want to go against the grain. And even for wild cards, there were only seven teams in my mind completely. I didn't even have the Jets really on my radar. There were really only seven playoff teams in my mind at all. But again, there's just no reason in my, you know, I'm assuming you've, well, you probably, I can tell you, I can look right now and see if you have the Bengals as a wild card. But yeah, but yeah, there's no reason to believe, at worst, that the Bengals will be the best, the top wild card, if not winning that division. But again, I expect to see another leap from Joe Burrow. Spoiler alert, I almost put him as my MVP pick before I went to, before I went to the boring choice. But, you know, again, hopefully a healthy Ja'Marr Chase all year. The whole thing was they improved that offensive line last year, and it still wasn't that great. But, you know, they're another year together as a unit. And I'm just all in on Joe Burrow here and these guys. And, you know, we didn't make any Super Bowl picks here, but I'd like to think they can make a run at it.
Yeah, it like this is not about me predicting the Bengals are really any worse than they were last year. It's just about the Ravens being better. Like, I wouldn't be surprised to see the Bengals finish with basically the same record they did last year, but for the Ravens to end up winning the division, you know, I know that would be a tough ask for both teams to have, what, 12 or 13 wins or something like that. But even if, you know, every NFL team has some games that could literally go either way just as a result of luck. I mean, if the Bengals end up with one fewer win than they did last year and the Ravens get one more, that's just something that I could see happening based on the talent of these two teams. I think both teams are going to be very, very good this year. I think the Steelers will be pretty solid as well. And then if I got to pick a punching bag in this division, it'll probably be the Browns. You know, they're just, again, there's reason to be optimistic for almost every team in the NFL before anybody steps on the field week one. So eventually you have to figure out, okay, who do I think is actually going to fall a little short of expectation? I think it might be the Browns. I think Deshaun just might be a little cooked. So
I still don't think they're going to be terrible, though. Like, I think they're still going to get seven or eight wins. Like, this is a really competitive division, probably one of the more competitive top-to-bottom divisions in the whole league. But yeah, I like the Ravens too. You know, they're one of my wild cards. Lamar will be the key. Like you said, they did it with Snoop Huntley last year, and you know, we've talked a lot about Lamar and how that offense is going to change. And like I said, you know, there will be some other decent teams in the AFC, but I have no reason to believe that they're not going to be a wild card team.
I would agree. AFC South, we are both on the same page with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Look,
who the fuck else
would be a shock. It would be a shock if either the Colts or the Texans are in the mix for this division crown this year. The Titans are really the only other team that could make a run. And honestly, Pat, it wouldn't shock me if they did, if they kind of put up one more fight before they have to actually tear things down, because they do have good players. They're all just getting older. And I mean, you know, Vrabel's a great coach. I have no doubt that he's going to get the best out of this team possible. But it's, you just look at the Jags roster and their youth and their superior talent, regardless of the age. It's very difficult to convince myself to pick anybody other than the Jacksonville Jaguars here, especially after that playoff win last year.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said about the Titans too, is that they are a system. Like Mike Vrabel runs a system there, and they try to get the players that they think can do it, and they're going to be able to do that system. But I just think this is the year where that's just not enough. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if the Titans have nine wins. You know, they're going to be a team that's in the hunt graphic all year long. But the Jaguars are a fun team. They're going to be an explosive team, an exciting team, as opposed to the Titans, who are going to be boring as shit. But they're going to win games. They're going to win ugly games. But I can't give them this division with how good Jacksonville looks, especially in the second year of Doug Peterson, with Trevor Lawrence, getting a guy like Calvin Ridley, and then another year to build rapport with everyone else. I just can't see them not running it back.
I would certainly hope not, but I will say this is one of the divisions that I look at, and I'm like, when we say that it's too easy to predict, it wouldn't shock me to see the Titans just be like, hey, we're still here. So everything in me tells me the Jags are going to win it because they are the better team, but just for, you know, devil's advocate sake and being like it can't possibly be this easy to pick divisions, this would not be one that totally shocked me if it went another direction. Pat, in a similar vein, in the AFC West, we've got the Kansas City Chiefs.
Right.
Now,
this is one that
I felt way better about recently, or a couple days ago, than I do right now, because the Travis Kelce injury and Chris Jones continuing to hold out does make me a little nervous about the Chiefs' outlook. However, they still got Andy Reid. Still got Patrick Mahomes. The Kelce injury is probably not that big of a deal. And I just don't know who's going to put up, I guess the Chargers. Who else is going to put up a major fight in this division, you're asking the Chargers to make a pretty big leap if they're going to do that. So we're both going with the Chiefs, and it's just been one of the safer bets that you can make in sports over the past couple of years.
Yeah, and because last year people were people were saying that, oh, this is the year of the Chiefs with all the talent that the Chargers added and the Broncos and Raiders added too. And they still proved us wrong, granted, with Travis Kelce and Chris Jones. But even without them, unless something happens to Mahomes or Andy Reid, God forbid, I'm not worried about them. And I do like Chargers a lot. If the Chargers were in, honestly, maybe any other division, definitely if they were in the North or the South, I would pick them to win that division. But, I just have no reason to believe otherwise. And, you know, I believe the Broncos will be a little better this year. I hope to God they are, but not enough.
Oh, man.
Not enough. And then the Raiders are probably going to fucking stink, which just makes me a very sad panda. until we are proven otherwise, the AFC runs through Kansas City, let alone the West.
Yeah, I do think the Chargers will be pretty good. And look, if Chris Jones does miss the season or get traded or whatever it is, I do think the door is open for a team like the Chargers to win this division if everything were to break right. Because Justin Herbert's a guy, I don't care what anybody says, like, his talent is not levels below Patrick Mahomes. Like, from a pure talent perspective, he is right there. He just has not had as many things go right, and he does, you know, force things maybe a little more than Mahomes does. But if everything could kind of come together around him, it would not shock me to see the Chargers, make a little push here. But if Chris Jones comes back, you know, the Chiefs have this core. It's their division, man. It feels like when the Patriots had Belichick and Brady, and it was just like, you are stupid to pick anybody else in that division for as long as those guys are around. Okay, AFC wildcard teams. Pat, you've got the Dolphins, the Chargers, and the Ravens, who we just talked a little bit about all of them. And then I have the Bengals, the Jets, and the Chargers. So looks like we are on a pretty similar page. We've got whoever comes in second in the AFC North is going to make it. We both like the Chargers. And then the only difference is you've got the Dolphins, and I've got the Jets. So I think we kind of agree the same sort of teams are in the mix here for these wildcard spots. Again, I wouldn't be shocked to see the Titans lurking around here with like a 9-8 type of record.
So that would not shock me in the least.
Yeah, I think they're going to be on the just right on the borderline. And same with the Steelers. I think those are really the only teams that I'm looking at as dangerous sort of wild card teams that I think will be kind of hanging around. The rest of these teams have a little more work to do.
Yeah,
so
I'm glad we're on the same page. Yep.
Yeah. The Raiders. Yep. Mm-hmm, they're right there. They are going to be picking first overall in the draft this year. Okay. Let's go to the NFC. So in the NFC East, Pat, much like our Chiefs pick, it's just kind of like, how do you really pick anybody else? But it's the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, they lost a lot of pieces on defense. We know this, but what did they do? They replaced them with a bunch of guys from Georgia who are all probably going to be fucking studs. And offensively, they still have the best line in the league, arguably the best receiver duo in the league, other than maybe, you know, I mean, there's a lot of good receiver duos in fairness, but they're one of the top three at the very least. Jalen Hurts is only getting better every year. Running backs, they now have multiple options. I don't know if this is going to be better cumulatively or worse than it was when they had Miles Sanders. I have no idea, but either way, they at least have, you know, some guys that they can mix it up with. Just an incredibly well-rounded team, and a team that I believe in more than I believe in, you know, say the Dallas Cowboys. I think the Dallas Cowboys are really the only other team that's going to be in the mix to win the division. I don't think the Giants are quite at that point, and the Commanders, as much as I love them, truthfully, they are probably not in that mix either. But I just think the coaching's better on the Eagles. The quarterback play is better on the Eagles. And defensively, you know, the Cowboys probably have the talent edge now, but the Eagles are going to be just fine there as well. So I got to go with them.
Yeah, especially with the draft the Eagles had, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Even losing Shane Steichen, I mean, this is Nick Sirianni's offense, and it's still going to be his offense. And just another year getting better for Hurts, another year getting better for Devontae Smith, who, my boy, I've got him in a few leagues this year, so let's ride, Devontae. But
I love Devontae.
And yeah, like you said, the running back situation's gross for fantasy, but I think it's going to prove well for, you know, for real life football, despite the injury history they have there. But they've proven that they can literally make it work with Boston Scott if they have to. So not terribly worried about that, though I do really like that division. Like, I called the AFC North the most competitive division in the AFC. I think this is going to be the most competitive division in all of football. I don't really, you know, obviously I think the Commanders will be kind of mid, but they will still be, you know, eight or so wins, you know, in the conversation. They're not going to be a slouch.
No, and I mean, this division proved that last year. No team in this division finished below 500 last year. The Commanders, I believe, went 8-8-1. So everybody was 500 or better, and the Commanders are a team that I really like. Their O-line is really the only concern right now, but I think Sam Howell is more than good enough to command. I'm sorry, this offense, and then the weapons around him. The weapons around him are no slouch either. As long as McLaurin can get over this turf toe at some point, he's got some nice weapons, and that defense is not bad. So I really do think the Commanders will be a team that we find, they go like 9-8, but somehow miss the playoffs because the NFC is just so competitive, particularly the NFC East. But I think the Eagles do come out on top here. In the NFC North, Bat, again on the same page, which just worries me greatly, but we are going with the Detroit Lions. The biting kneecaps all the way.
I went first, and I thought I was going to be different. Turns out you're just a bona fide Minnesota Vikings hater, it appears.
Oh, man. Oh, Pat. Oh, boy. The longtime viewers of this pod will recall the episodes with Maddie where Maddie and I just kind of shit on the Vikings every week because as they kept building that insanely good record, we just kept calling them frauds all year. We knew. And then they get to the playoffs, and it was the easiest pick frauds of all time to say Giants are going to knock their asses out. Negative point differential, Pat. How do you go 13-4 with a negative point differential? And here's our episodic siren, call going on right now because I don't know. I just live in hell, I guess. But, yeah, the Vikings are not a team I was even remotely considering. If I was going to go any other direction, it would have been the Bears, honestly. It would have been a bold call that Justin Fields. Yeah, it would have. Okay. That's if. Because, I think the Lions are going to win the division. But the Bears would be the only other team I would really think about picking here. And that would be a bet on Fields making the jump and the defensive pieces they added, particularly at linebacker, helping them out and letting them be competitive. Because it's a brand new division. Aaron Rodgers is gone. The Vikings, again, as far as I'm concerned, Pat, the Vikings went like 10-7 last year. Like, that's what everything suggests they should have done. So there's no big dog in this division anymore, but I am going to go with the Lions because they are the most proven team now left in this division, which is crazy to me to say, but that is kind of what's happening with the players that they have and just the ascent that Detroit is having. I'm a believer, and I think they're going to knock off the Chiefs tomorrow night. There's my hot take.
You're stealing my hot take.
I
put a little bit on Detroit plus 4.5 when I had the chance, so. But I wouldn't put it past them to outright win the game. Yeah, I just think that Detroit, one, they're really fun. Last year, they were really fun, man. But their defense just fucking stunk.
It
sure did. They were just fortunate enough that their offense was also good enough to kind of make up for that. And you need to think that they'll improve on defense. And I love what they did on offense. So they basically went and got a running back duo. They upgraded. Last year they go from DeAndre Swift to DeAndre Swift and Jamal Williams to Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery, both of whom I think are better compared to the alternatives. And they're going to run like the way they know how to. Amon-Ra St. Brown's one of my favorite players in the whole league. Obviously Jared Goff is mid, but that good might enough. Be okay. That may be all they need. So the big thing for them is that defense going to get better to the point. They also need to play better on the road. They were fucking miserable on the road last year. But if at home in these shootout games in the dome, man, they were letting it fly. But if they can kind of do that and settle in, I still like the Vikings. A lot of what you said is very true. I still like the Vikings because they still have a lot of those same things in place. I do think they'll be a wild card team. But I feel like the Lions were really close last year. And I think they're going to make that jump that they need to.
Yeah, the Vikings, I don't expect them to go anywhere. I mean, they brought in Brian Flores to actually make that defense hopefully decent. But, you talk about the Lions defense. They added a lot of guys in that secondary to ensure what you just talked about, that they don't just get, thrown on all fucking year like it's nothing. They added C.J. Gardner-Johnson, Cameron Sutton, Emmanuel Mosley. They drafted Brian Branch. Like, this secondary is brand new secondary, who dis, and I am a believer that they are going to take a big step forward defensively, and if they can do that to complement that offense, it is going to be quite a show in Detroit. The only thing that gives me any sort of pause is that a lot of people seem to be jumping on this bandwagon, but look, sometimes that's not
fun.
The wrong thing to do. They are fun.
They're
fun.
A team you want to root for, man. I want beat them gnawing at kneecaps and where the fuck Dan Campbell said. Like, they're fun. You want to root for them.
Yeah. Give me the Lions-Jags Super Bowl and give it to me now. Yeah. The AFC and NFC hype trains of ascending teams, just feed that to me right now. I'm done with the Chiefs, done with the Niners. Hell, I'm even done with the Eagles. Mm-hmm. Give me this matchup right now. Okay, Pat, we've got the NFC South. You've got the Falcons. Yeah. I've got the Saints. So this is where we differentiate here. You believe in Desmond Ridder? Is that what you're telling me?
Enough. I believe in Desmond Ridder enough. The way I see it is this Falcons team is like the Titans team in the past, you know, with Arthur Smith at the helm of the offense. Not saying that they're going to be the number one seed the way the Titans have miraculously found themselves sometimes in the last few years, but in a bad enough division, I think they are just going to run like crazy. They made moves on defense, getting guys like David Onyemata and other guys I'm forgetting because, of course, I always forget things in the moment when I'm thinking about it earlier. And they've got a great offensive line as well to run behind. Bijan Robinson is going to be a, you know, like the fact that, you know, people were worried about Tyler Allgeier stealing carries from him. No, it just goes to show that they were able to get an 1,000-yard rusher out of Tyler Allgeier. Imagine what Bijan Robinson can do with all those carries. And he's going to do it. They are going to run like
for 4,000.
Crazy. And we quickly mentioned Drake London. I love Drake London. You know, Kyle Pitts is there. If you throw the ball to him, he's the best tight end prospect ever, probably. So he's there if they want to do it. But even if they don't, I don't think they necessarily have to. But I think this is going to be more of a team that's like a unit, like a system. And that division's not great. Not terrible, but not great.
Yeah.
And I think the Saints, it wouldn't shock me if the Saints won it. I think the Saints will, again, be a bit more exciting, but I don't think exciting is what wins this division this year.
No, I think that this division is wide open, and this is not one where I am firmly like, you're wrong, you're crazy, the Saints are going to win it. The Saints are just kind of who I settled on because I think they have the best quarterback in the division, you know, by a pretty wide margin for at least this year. I think, you know, everybody hopes Bryce Young takes that crown sooner rather than later. But look at the other quarterbacks around this division. You've got Desmond Ridder, who's a third-round guy who we don't know much about at this point. You've got Bryce Young, who's a rookie. And then you've got Baker Mayfield, who's just grasping onto this starting job and hoping that he can stick. Derek Carr is a guy who's never been great, but he is a guy who's always been sort of in that Kirk Cousins-y tier. And it's just, I think he's going to go on a little revenge tour here with the Saints. I think he's pissed off about what happened in Las Vegas. I think he wants to prove that Jimmy G was not an upgrade. And I think he's got the weapons to make that all happen. The defense isn't bad either. You look at their schedule, which I can't really say look how easy their schedule is as if it's an advantage over the other teams in their division because they're all basically playing the same
Falcons
schedule.
Yeah, Falcons got to play the Panthers and Bucks twice each as well.
Right.
Oh,
sorry. My camera died because, of course, it did. I'll fix that in a moment.
Oh, thank God! I thought I was going to have to fly solo. Oh,
no,
God.
No, flying solo necessary.
Oh, Jesus! Like, I don't have that kind of camera presence.
Yeah, no, I'll try and grab a battery here in a moment. But no, I think the Saints are going to win this division. But it's going to be a tight one. I don't think the Panthers are going to be bad either. And the Bucks, like, you know, this is a team that I've often compared to the Seahawks. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they end up, you know, surprising people a little bit. Not to the point where they compete for or win the division, but just a point where they're competitive enough. Let's see here. I got to debate how I want to handle this because my battery is in the other room. Give me one moment, Pat.
Lexi's roasting us.
Yeah. I checked it. I had 4 bars before I started this. Pat, you've got the 49ers in the NFC West. Go ahead and tell the people why, because I have them too, and I'll be back in 2 seconds.
I'll go ahead and tell why. We talked about, obviously, Arizona is going to be terrible, and the Rams aren't going to be super competitive. And you look at it, San Francisco compared to Seattle, and I'm not necessarily super worried that Geno Smith is going to fall off, but the possibility is there. And if that does end up happening, then, you know, San Francisco could run away with that division. But you look up and down this division, and they are loaded with talent. Christian McCaffrey, Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, Trent Williams, we talked about, Joey Bosa, Nick Bosa, sorry, God, we're struggling now. They're Eric Armstead, Fred Warner, they've just got talent up and down that team. And if there's, you know, we talked about, you know, Atlanta being a system, but Kyle Shanahan's system is the system right now. And not only do they have the system, but they have the talent combined. Even if Seattle is just as good as they were last year, I don't think it matters, and I still like San Francisco there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm here. I'm just trying to replace the battery. I think Seattle's going to compete. I mean, they were within one game of the division up until like week 13 last year, so it was definitely close. The other two teams in this division are not a threat. That goes without saying.
Understatement.
So, I mean, look, I thought about picking the Seahawks just for like differentiation, but it's really hard to pick against this Niners team with the defense that they have, with the offensive weapons that they have, and Brock Purdy proving that he can be, you know, everything they want him to be as far as like just spreading it around to those weapons. So I think the Niners are the easy pick here. And again, probably heading back to another NFC title game would not shock me in the least.
Yeah, so then there we've got some of the our wild card choices. I mentioned the Vikings, and then I have the Cowboys and Giants. I've got three teams coming out of the NFC East, and Bran has Seahawks, Cowboys, and Falcons. So the big difference is you have the Saints and the Seahawks making the playoffs, and I have the Vikings and Giants. And, you know, just to touch on the Giants, as they're the only, you know, unique thing about mine, the fact that they were able to make the playoffs last year goes to show that they are more than heading in the right direction under Brian Daboll. I mean, you don't have to believe that Daniel Jones is some kind of superstar quarterback. He doesn't need to be Josh Allen. He needs to be Daniel Jones. And we've laughed at how hilarious their wide receiver room is, especially from a fantasy perspective. From a real-life perspective, I mean, that's good. You want weapons for him, and he's built a rapport with Darren Waller. But that offense still runs through Saquon Barkley, and you've got to hope they stay healthy. And they've been hitting on guys in the draft lately. Andrew Thomas, who was viciously mocked for being a terrible draft pick, is one of the best left tackles in the NFL. Top three, probably, and that might be saying something. And then Dexter Lawrence, like, they are hitting on these draft picks. If they can get something out of Evan Neal as well, a top 10 pick, that could be an elite offensive line. And they played really well on defense. And again, just like, I believe in Brian Daboll. I believe in Mike Kafka. I believe in that system that they have there. And despite a competitive division, them making the playoffs last year, there is nothing happened in the other direction to make me believe that they wouldn't do it again.
Yeah, I struggled with the Giants because I'm with you. Like, I think that they are definitely going the right direction. I love the coaching that they have with Daboll and Mike Kafka, and all they did was, you know, go out and get Darren Waller and make things better. I just trying to figure out, like, who to take out of the playoff. What I ended up settling on, I went through and picked every game in the NFL this year, and then just kind of saw where things fell after that. I had the Giants finishing at 8-9, which is like, they're going to have a good season, but I just feel like, look, progression is not always completely linear when it comes to improving like this.
Sure.
Sometimes shit just happens in a season, and it makes it where even if you got better as a team, your record doesn't necessarily reflect it. So, look, would it shock me to see the Giants in the playoffs? Absolutely not. There are just some other teams I like a little bit more that I wanted to get in there, the Seahawks being one of them that I just kind of justified. You know, they add JSN. I think Geno's the real deal. That defense was damn good last year and is only getting, you know, more experience now. And then you've got the Cowboys. I think they're kind of just locks for the playoffs every year. They're just also locks to disappoint once they get there. And then I got the Falcons as my final wild card. I know it might be just psychotic to pick two teams from that fucking division to make the playoffs, but again, that's the kind of thing that happens, and it's one of those things that, like, nobody really saw it coming, but it's proves the randomness that the NFL can sometimes give you. I think the Falcons are a talented team, so I would not be surprised if they were on, you know, at least the edge of the playoffs. But I've got them making the playoffs. So my wild card teams, like I said, Seahawks, Cowboys, and Falcons. So there you go, our division winners. Just a couple of differences, nothing crazy. But we'll see who ends up being the most right.
We're gonna somehow be way off somehow.
I hope we get nothing right. I hope we get literally not a single division.
Literally, the
right.
Other half of the league makes the playoffs.
Yeah, somehow it's just like the Browns win the North, the Patriots win the East, just
Raiders.
All this stuff. Go Raiders. That one's not happening. Okay, but now we've got our division / playoff predictions out there into the world. Pat, let's get our award predictions out there as well. You really going off the wall here with your MVP prediction.
So much so that I also picked him to be my offensive player of the year.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Patrick Mahomes. Like I said, I wanted Joe Burrow.
Guy stinks.
And the way I saw it was that my MVP was always going to be my offensive player of the year as well, because I just – typically they've almost basically the offensive player of the year has become the non-quarterback award, but I don't see there being I don't see the obvious Justin Jefferson or Cooper Kupp or Derrick Henry from the last 3 years that have won that award that have been better than the MVP, who more often than not is a quarterback. And obviously, and with Kelce possibly being out, we can even see this more, but we saw last year that it didn't matter the weapons. Mahomes is that guy. He is that guy. And when it's all said and done, we could be talking about the best quarterback in NFL history. Certainly talent-wise, he may already be there, but... Yeah, I think that train's going to keep rolling. And though I love Joe Burrow, I love Justin Herbert, I'm not ready to stick my neck out on the line for them quite yet. But so, yeah, call me safe, call me whatever. I know. That's what I'm doing.
I think eventually voter fatigue will set in. And look, it won't set in if he keeps blowing out every other player and is by far statistically the best quarterback. But I think it's important to note Tom Brady only won 3 MVPs in the course of his entire career. Mahomes is already at 2. I think with how many talented quarterbacks there are, I'd be surprised if he won it again. Granted, like I said, if he throws, 46 touchdowns and the guy in second place, say Josh Allen, throws 35, then yeah, obviously you got to give it to Mahomes. But I think, I would take the field over Mahomes, which I guess that's probably not bold either because that's just generally the better bet. The guy that I went with, though, is Jalen Hurts. I mentioned how he's just gotten better every single year. I think with what might be a running back downgrade, I'm trying to figure out if I actually believe that or not from Miles Sanders to the guys they have. But I think Jalen Hurts may take a little bit more of the rushing load this year than he already did. But even if he doesn't, he's just gotten better every year. He has an incredible group of receivers to throw to. Again, the best offensive line in football, which that's a huge one. Like that just gives you such a safe floor of elite production when you are already an elite player. Jalen Hurts is a guy that I thought should have gotten it last year up until like the last 2 weeks of the year. I think he ended up missing one of those games or something like that where Mahomes pulled ahead because of it. But up until the last 2 or 3 weeks of the year, I thought Jalen Hurts should have won the MVP. And if the Eagles have a similar season where they just kind of run through everybody and route to being, another top seed in the NFC, I like Jalen Hurts for that. As far as offensive player of the year, so most of the time, this doesn't go to a quarterback. I was looking at the history. I mean, recently, it's been a receiver. Last 3 years, it's been a receiver. Sometimes quarterbacks get it. Like Mahomes got it the year he threw 50 touchdowns, which, I mean, understandable. But it seems like this award has become a pseudo non-QB award unless that QB really lights the league the fuck on fire. So I decided to go with Ja'Marr Chase here. I think Ja'Marr Chase is going to be statistically the best wide receiver in football this year. I wasn't considering receiver in our fantasy draft. If I was, I would have strongly thought about Chase over Jefferson. Just wasn't even in my thinking. But the Bengals' schedule is very friendly to opposing receivers. I mean, really not a lot of defenses he needs to be scared of. And I think when you look at just him versus Jefferson, like, I think Jordan Addison's going to emerge, and I don't just say that as a new Jordan Addison owner now, but I think Jordan Addison, in a couple weeks, is going to prove to be a very reasonable number two target alongside Jefferson, to the point where Jefferson's not just going to monopolize all the targets and touchdowns and snaps. I mean, he'll get a shit ton, don't get me wrong, but it's not going to be where he is just taking everything. And I think Chase, they're going to be in similar situations now, and I just think Chase, with having Joe Burrow throw to him, if he can just put together a fully healthy year, he's got to snag one of these at some point. So I'm picking him.
When I was thinking non-quarterbacks who haven't won it yet, Chase was probably the first guy really that I thought of. I didn't want to do Jefferson again, and then running backs like Eckler, McCaffrey, Henry, they're kind of not on the downslope of their career, but their prime started, and now they haven't gone down yet, but they're nearing the end of their prime there. So Chase is a good pick if you are going to go in line with recent trends in it not being a quarterback.
Yeah, so I'm going Ja'Marr Chase there. And then, Pat, Defensive Player of the Year, you've got your boy.
My boy.
Max Crosby. So it'll be one bright spot on the Raiders this year, at least.
Max, bias aside, I am very biased. Not only he's my favorite player on my favorite team, but the guy somehow – well, it's not like – I feel like he's very properly rated just because there are so many elite pass rushers in the league. Like you've got, we talked about Nick Bosa, Miles Garrett, TJ Watt. I feel like Crosby is in that echelon right below that, which is fair. I mean, the dude's an elite pass rusher, but there are just a lot of really good guys that are better than him. But again, he's going to be a bright spot on a really bad Raiders team. And And, you know, he's going to rack up the sacks. I could see him leading the league with sacks. This is more wishful thinking for me, I'll say, than anything. And I knew that this was going to be the pick that I was going to go a bit off the beaten path. But I love Max Crosby. He's great. He deserves better.
Yeah, and honestly, Pat, I don't think it's wishful thinking. I mean, seeing it be a Raider and you being a Raiders fan, I don't think, you know, negates it at all. This is a guy that is ascending.
Sure.
Yeah, this is a guy that is ascending, and I think is a guy that people are kind of eager to give the flowers to and give his due. So if he's up there statistically, I don't see why this is an unreasonable pick at all. He'll definitely be in that mix. I'm going with a guy kind of a similar idea, but definitely a little bit bigger of a name. I'm going with Micah Parsons.
Love it.
Just an incredibly versatile player and a guy who I believe he's entering his third year in the league now. It seems he's destined for one of these at some point, and playing in such a massive market like Dallas, all the eyes are going to be on him. If he just puts together the type of season I know he's capable of, he's got to get one of these awards eventually. So I'm basically just going to fucking pick him until he gets one. So Micah Parsons, I'm going for defensive player of the year. Pat, offensive rookie of the year. I thought I was going to end up going the same as you, and then as I thought through my options, I ended up going a different way. But
I thought I was going to go a different way as well.
Really? Okay. Yeah, I
went Bijan Robinson, and we found in years past that this award really goes to a quarterback a lot. And honestly, if I was going to go a quarterback, I was going to go Bryce Young, but I decided to go Robinson just because I think he's going to be the focal point of a team that makes the playoffs. Like, I don't care that he's not a quarterback. If you are what your offense runs through, then that's it. And like we said, he's going to get a ton of touches should he stay healthy the way Tyler Allgeier did. He's probably going to get more than Allgeier did, and he's going to produce even more of that. He's going to catch a bunch of passes. This is the best running back prospect since Saquon Barkley, and I think we're going to see the fruits of that right away. And despite there being three other quarterbacks drafted in the top five picks, I don't think we have any, there isn't the slam dunk prospect. There isn't the Trevor Lawrence. There isn't that kind of thing. So I'll ride with fantasy here.
I agree with you. No, Bijan was absolutely where I thought I was going to go. And then as I ran through my options, I was like, you know, one, yeah, I want to be different and not pick the same thing as you. But two, if there is any quarterback here that can do it, it is this guy. And I'm going with Anthony Richardson. I think Richardson... Look, awards at times kind of have the same criteria that fantasy does. Like, you just want the guys that put up numbers. And I think Anthony Richardson is going to put up enough numbers that he can definitely earn this award. You know, it may be a slow start for him out of the gate, but I think he's going to run plenty. He's going to, you know, catch it. Things are going to catch on passing-wise as the season goes along. And I think he's going to put up a pretty nice rookie year statistically at the very least. I mean, will award, you know, voters be super eager to give offensive rookie of the year to a quarterback who probably led a team that got four or five wins? I don't know.
And that probably led the league in interceptions.
That's honestly a big key. If he can keep the picks down, I think he will take home this award. But I do think Bijan's the safest pick. That said, I'll go with Anthony Richardson. I have a lot of faith in him. I think he's a smart player. I think he'll learn quickly. And I think he's going to put that package together within a couple of weeks and just... You know, I really hope part of me hopes I'm wrong because our defending champion of our fantasy league did wait on quarterback and got Anthony Richardson. And I hate that, but
I finally went with him. I was 16 team league last night. I finally had to do it.
Okay. Well, I think it's going to pay off. I really like the guy and I think he's going to have a nice year. Defensive rookie of the year. Pat, you and I actually picked the same guy. We are going with Jalen Carter on the Eagles, an absolute abomination that the league let him go to Philly.
Well, that's the thing that I think I like. Not to compare him to Aaron Donald, but in terms of his draft fall. But the difference with Aaron Donald is that, like, people didn't really see it coming. Like, Jalen Carter came into last year's draft process as being the number one prospect, possibly the number one pick, and fell for kind of just dubious reasons. Obviously, he had the legal issue that was really never going to be a thing in terms of his availability, more so just kind of a character thing. But they should see this one coming. Like Aaron Donald, it was just that, like, he went 13th, he was picked to go there, and he overachieved. But this was a guy that was still on draft day, was Mel Kiper's number one prospect, and they let him fall to 9 to the Eagles of all the teams? Like, any other team, the Bears, the Seahawks, anybody. But the fact that he was that good of a prospect, who's now going to be on that good of a team, who's going to have a good defense, you're going to see his name in the headlines on a weekly basis, so... It's funny because, like, it seemed like it wasn't an obvious pick, but I think it is. I think it's more likely him than a guy like Will Anderson or Tyree Wilson or Devon Witherspoon, other guys that went before him.
Yeah, I can't get that clip out of my mind. It was like his first snap of the preseason where he just blew past whoever the O-lineman was and I think tried to murder. It might have been Josh Johnson. Just frightening strength and skill from this guy. You know, was the number one overall player for months, honestly, leading up to the draft. And then, like you said, off the field, things kind of tanked that. But the talent suggests that this is not a crazy pick whatsoever. And as long as he's got enough playing time to rack up these numbers, I think he's definitely got probably the best shot at it. And then comeback player of the year.
Might as well rename the award.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's DeMar Hamlin. And look, it was just a matter of if he was going to make the roster, right? And he did, and he's going to play at least in certain packages or sparingly. But as long as he steps on that field, like it's pretty obvious that he's winning.
You talk a lot about scary injuries in the past. This man was inches from death on a football field. You know, it would be a different story from the fact that, you know, like guy got in a bad car accident, you know, barely makes it and then comes back. Like we watched this happen in real time. And
yeah,
I remember that, you know, I think everyone just remembers that night just vividly. It was unprecedented. And, you know, not only the fact that, you know, granted he lived and turned out okay, but he turned out okay to the point where he can play football. Like I wouldn't be surprised if they named the award after him. But yeah. Honestly, give somebody else it too, because everybody knows that he's going to win. Give it to a second guy. Give it to Cooper Kupp. Give it to Calvin. Right. I don't think they're going to give it to Calvin Ridley because of why he didn't play. But, you know, give it to somebody else too. But it's the DeMar Hamlin Award, and it has to be.
Yeah, 100%. And, Pat, we didn't write this down, but I just came to mind one award we didn't touch on. Coach of the Year.
Oh, so,
I mean, top of my head, I've got Dan Campbell. I think that's just an easy one. I mean, it's going to be somebody from one of the playoff teams that we picked. You have to, you know, have a good team if you're going to be in this conversation. I think, again, another guy where people are kind of dying to give him credit and in the form of an award, and I think this is definitely an opportunity to do that. If the Lions win their division and even, you know, if they were to top that off with winning at least one playoff game, Dan Campbell seems like a lock for this. For just the narrative-wise, that seems like he would easily lock it up if those things were to transpire. So I'll go with Dan Campbell since I am projecting those things to occur.
Yeah, and so am I. But if I guess by that logic, which is the rationale, it's always a team that overachieves. So I guess if I weren't to go Dan Campbell, I would go with your boy Arthur Smith. But I do think it's going to be Dan Campbell, especially with how much of a highlight grabber I think that team is going to be, more so than Atlanta.
Yeah, I would agree. Okay, now we will preview week one just a little bit. We don't have time to go through every game. We'll be here all fucking night. But we got the most interesting games in week one. Each of us just picked two games here. Pat, my first one is Jaguars and Colts. I just think seeing Anthony Richardson in his first real NFL game action is going to be fascinating to watch. The leash will be off. The training wheels will be off of Anthony Richardson. Like, I'm sure that the Colts didn't want to give everything away that they wanted to use Anthony Richardson for, especially with Shane Steichen, you know, being the coach there. I'm sure that they've got some things under wraps, and I want to see what he can bring to the table now that the games count and, you know, the lights are on. And then you've got on the other side the Jacksonville Jaguars. Will they make that leap and become the elite team that you and I both think they're going to be and win that division? How is it going to look with Calvin Ridley in there for a regular season game?
How's it going to look with Tank Bigsby in there?
Tank Bigsby, yeah. I mean, if the last preseason game is any indication, he's going to play a lot. So I think that they're going to be a very fun team to watch, and this is going to be a game where, you know, just a lot of eyes are going to be on this one. And then I've also got Packers versus Bears for similar reasons, two teams that we don't really know exactly what they're going to look like. I mean, the Packers, it's going to be Jordan Love's not first regular season game, but I mean first regular season game where he comes in knowing that he's the guy for the entire offseason. And, you know, how good are the Packers going to be this year? And on the flip side, how good are the Bears going to be? How much of a step forward is Justin Fields going to take? What does the connection with him and DJ Moore look like? You know, these are two teams that their range of outcomes is massively wide coming into this year, and week one will give us an indication of what way they're both going to be leaning. So I'm excited to watch it and see what the NFC North is going to look like in a post-Aaron Rodgers era.
And speaking of Aaron Rodgers, the game I'll be watching is Monday night. Bills-Jets. If you didn't notice, absolutely, I did not even mention the Jets in my playoff picture because I don't think they're going to flop quite as hard as the Broncos did last year, but I see some parallels. We talked about the offensive line. They're talking I saw First Take on a television yesterday. I wasn't watching it, but it said, like, the headline was like, will the Jets defense be historic? It's like, what? It's like, what do you mean? Will they be historic? And apparently, I don't even remember who said it, but they'll be like the 85 Bears. It's like, you are setting yourselves up to fail. But, man, the lights are going to be so bright for Aaron Rodgers there just to see what happens. I like the Bills in the game, obviously, but it's the start of an era. Whether it'll be, you know, whether they'll live up to the very lofty and unrealistic expectations, in my opinion, or will it be the start of another disaster? Either way, it's going to be interesting because it's Aaron Rodgers, because it's the New York media, and that's where it all kicks off. And then I mentioned Dolphins Chargers just because I'm very high on both of those two teams, particularly offensively. And I think that while both teams should have a decent defense, I just think there's going to be a lot of excitement in that game as opposed to the Thursday night game, where I think it's just going to be a lot of points. Not necessarily good defense. I think there's going to be just a ton of points, but I think the Dolphins-Chargers is going to be a really fun one. I'm really high on Justin Herbert. We have to be high on the Chargers after our boy Austin was here a few weeks ago. Still doesn't feel like that actually happened. And
fever dream.
And I'm super high on. Tua is one of Pat's pals. So got a ride with him and the Dolphins there. So that'll be a fun one. I don't even know how much I'm going to be able to watch the NFL this Sunday, sadly, but I'll try to tune in when I can, and it'll be fun because football.
Yeah, football's back, baby. It is beautiful. All right,
and you can catch it on the NFL Sunday Ticket on YouTube.
They're not paying me for this one, so.
Oh, thank God. Okay.
Okay, finishing it out with our viewer questions here.
We just got a letter. We just got a letter. We just got a letter. Wonder who it's from.
All right, first question comes from our own Brett Daigle,
he finally answers
his
question.
Four questions.
Mr. Daigle.
Every week, this is
Cheshire
High. BDaigs97 asks me, how much do you buy into weekly rankings on ESPN, Yahoo, etc.? Look, it depends. For me, not much. It depends on how diehard of a fantasy player you are. I feel like I am educated enough and have a big picture understanding of things enough that I don't need to look at rankings to decide who to start. For example, I think Raheem Mostert is below James Cook in a lot of rankings, and I'm just like, I don't give a shit. Like, yeah. I've seen what Raheem Mostert can do with a full workload in a game where there's supposed to be a lot of points scored, and James Cook has not proven anything yet. So I'm going with Mostert week one in a game where he's going to have all that opportunity, and I will see what James Cook can do on Monday night without the pressure of hoping that he scores me a bunch of points when thus far in his career, short career, has not proven the ability to do that. So I think rankings have their place. You know, if there's a week where you can't be on top of everything, or if you're the type of person that's just not on top of everything, if you're a more casual fantasy player, there's nothing wrong with that. They do provide a decent look generally at which players are going to be better each week, but the fluctuation and like just things don't play out the way the rankings say that they should, really, ever. I mean, take it and look at projections every week. So projected points are essentially just rankings. Like, every single week you have guys who are teams who are projected for 100 points in fantasy, 100-plus points, and then they end up dropping 70, 80. Yeah. Like, and then you've got the teams projected for 80 that drop 140-plus, and it's like, okay, nobody really knows what's going on exactly. And so if you are to start a guy just because he's projected for half a point more than another guy, you're making a mistake. Start the guy that you believe in more. Figure out who you believe in more and go with your own gut. That's how I approach it.
Exactly. I do look at the rank. I mean, I look at ESPN's rankings in particular.
I do too.
Company plug. But because the way I see it is, you know, a lot of those guys are taking into account the same things that we are. The only thing I don't love about it is there's not a lot of rationale. You know, if you could find like, you know, some YouTubers, there are a lot of YouTubers that every week they'll do their, you know, top 24 for running backs and receivers, and they give some explanation. They'll say, hey, I've got this guy ahead of this guy, and here's why. And, you know, that's far more useful than just looking at a list where you get no rationale, because like they could have something bold and you know zero reasons why they chose what they did.
Exactly.
So, but again, if you... I always make my kind of have my preconceived notion going in the week of what I'm going to do. And I don't think I've ever looked at it and been like, I don't think it's ever definitively changed my mind unless I was really in a tough spot. Like, for example, this week I'm already in a tough spot because Chris Godwin is my wide receiver 4, and he's got a fantastic matchup against the Vikings, but like over Devontae Smith. So I've looked, I've seen like, hey, like, does anybody even have this in range? The answer is no. So like, But, like, I don't know, but if you're in a tough spot and you want more opinions, especially if you don't consider yourself super educated, then sure, but don't let them make your decisions for you. Make your own decisions.
That's a good point, too, on the explanations.
Don't listen to us either.
don't listen to us ever. No, I hate the rankings don't have explanations because, like, I did see that ranking where I saw James Cook, you know, 13, 14 spots above Raheem Mostert, and I'm like, I would love to know why. Like,
yeah.
Explain to me why you have a guy who hasn't really proven much at this level and is going up against a good Jets defense above a guy who's going to get a ton of work in a shootout. Like, I just want to know. I'm curious. So, yeah, I think that's why you have to almost take it upon yourself to come up with your own reasons. So,
I buy more
rankings,
into the
good guideline, but
I buy more into the start sit columns because, you know, typically you get a little more explanation and they're willing to, you know, because rankings, you're like, oh, the conceivably this guy's a better player, so I'll rank him ahead. But start sit columns typically factor more of the matchup and more of the logistics around it into it. So I like those better.
Absolutely. Next question. Is it morally wrong to fleece your friends that haven't played fantasy before in a trade? This question coming from Ben Grizz. Pat, I'm torn on this. I think there's a level of, look, if the trade is bad enough, if you have a good commissioner, it should get vetoed anyway. And I don't throw around the V word lightly because some leagues go fucking crazy with that shit.
Shouldn't exist.
It shouldn't in general exist. Unless it is to stop, you know, an absolute destruction of a team.
Well, I'll say collusion. Unless there is provable collusion.
Right.
I don't, like, say the thing, I could have traded Cooper Kupp for, you know, whatever, Jalen Reagor. Cooper Kupp could be out for weeks. Like, you don't know what can happen. In theory, true. You can look at it on paper and be like, oh, this is a terrible trade, but you don't know. So that's kind of a sidetrack there. But unless you can prove that there's collusion, don't veto a trade. Don't do it.
Yeah.
If they want to do
I guess I'm just thinking when I read, you know, hasn't played fantasy before, I'm thinking of somebody that just like doesn't know football at all and just kind of got talked into playing fantasy. And then the fact that person got talked into playing in a league could potentially ruin it for the rest of the league if they are the one to make a stupid trade. But
I would consider that to be collusion, though, honestly, like because.
Well, the ignorant person isn't trying to collude. They're just stupid and being taken advantage of. So here's what I would say. I would say you need to do your due diligence, or the commissioner of a league needs to do due diligence to make sure those type of people don't get in a league. As much as I hate to say that, like, because I want fantasy football to be for everybody if you want to play, but put them in a different league. Put them in a public league if they've never played before. They won't know the difference anyway. It doesn't matter, just to introduce them to the game. Because if you get them in an actually competitive league and then you destroy them in a trade, like, people are going to be mad at both of you. If you fleece them in a way where, you know, they know football, but you view the trade as being lopsided. No, I don't think that's morally wrong. You've both agreed to a trade, and it's going to go through. So that's just how it is.
Yeah, the way I see it is, like, generally my answer to the question is yes. Yes, it is. Like, it is morally wrong, especially, like, don't target someone. Like, don't – I think it's a different story, like, maybe if they offer you the trade.
Yeah.
You know, like, don't go pick on the guy or the girl that you think doesn't know football. And, what's the fun of that? Like, there are leagues that I'm in where, you
don't
know,
ruin it for everybody.
There are in leagues that I'm in where people aren't quite as serious, where I just don't make trades at all in that league. Where, like, because I just won't approach anyone. If someone approaches me, I'll do it. But I just think that it just kills the fun in it, because then, you're basically going to get super teams built out of, like, I just don't know how that would be fun. Like, I can't imagine me sitting here being like, oh, this guy doesn't know football at all. Let me trick him into a, like, what fun is that?
Don't be that guy.
Win on your own volition.
Don't be that guy. If you want to pull some convincing, you know, to try and sway them to accept your trade, if they, you know, are somebody that still knows football but can be swayed, then yeah, I have no problem with that. But here's how I would answer it. Approach it in a way that whatever you do, it doesn't ruin fantasy football for them. Like, we want this game to be something that is open to as many people as possible. So if you destroy them in a trade just to make your team better this year and then they never want to fucking play again, that's wrong. Like,
yeah.
Not just morally, it's just kind of mean. So don't do that. But, you know, if you can get the better of them in a trade and it could be a learning experience and it doesn't completely ruin their enjoyment of it or the league overall, no, nothing wrong.
There are guys
who've
been playing football for 10 years that still do shitty trades. Like, it happens.
Oh, yeah.
That happens, but you just shouldn't go into it with that mindset of, like, hey, don't make a trade that you would not make in any other league with anyone else. Like, you know, or think about it that way. Like, if I offered this trade in my main league, what would they say?
if the answer is you'd get laughed at, then maybe don't do it. Definitely a tough line to walk, but it's a line you got to walk. But I think ultimately you know the answer.
That's a great question.
Who the person is. It is a good question as we get into the actual start of the season. And finally, a matchup specific question, a start sit question, and very pertinent to me and you, Pat. That's why I love this. Flex, start Pacheco versus the Lions or Dotson versus Arizona. So Pat has Pacheco. I have Dotson. We are both starting each of these guys. Pat, who do you think is the better start this week?
I will say Pacheco, just as I alluded to earlier. I want any piece of this game that I can get, even though you'd think that it would disadvantage Pacheco because he's going to be more in the traditional running back role. But I want anyone I can get out of that game more so. I think Dotson's a good start. You know, we don't know the health of Terry McLaurin against a really bad team, but I feel like that could be a really ugly game. But I think, you know, this is one of those things where, like, you've got a good problem where, like, I think that whichever one of these guys you start will give you a desirable outcome. But I will say Pacheco they might score, like, 70 points in that game.
No, they very well might. And look, in true fashion to both of us, I will go Dotson.
Yeah.
And I think I also think if this is a PPR league, I even more firmly believe Dotson because Terry McLaurin's banged up. The Cardinals are just terrible, and I think the Commanders are going to come out firing. But Dotson, I just think is in for a really nice year. And if you are between, especially in PPR, I would go Jahan Dotson. So that is where we are at. But look, we're both going to feel the effects of this decision, regardless, because Pat and I have these guys in our starting lineup. Yep. So guys,
I hope we're both right.
I hope they both go for 20 plus in non PPR and then 30 plus in PPR.
Sure.
All right. That'll do it for this week, guys. Thank you for tuning in. We've got football this week. And by the way, going forward, we will have an actual consistent time, barring any sort of catastrophic disaster. Tuesdays, 7:30 Eastern will be when this podcast is live. And then I will upload it probably right after if you are listening on Spotify. And as a reminder, if you are watching on YouTube right now and you prefer to listen on Spotify, Apple, or wherever, we are on all major podcast platforms. The link is on our YouTube channel for that, assuming you're on YouTube right now. And if you are listening on Spotify or Apple or wherever else, come hang with us on YouTube. Just search for Off the Bench with Benchwarmer Brand on YouTube. Again, live 7:30 Eastern every week. But Pat, before we head into week one, got anything for the people?
No, you know, just thanks for watching, guys. We've had a really solid, one of our more consistent streams here from start to finish in terms of viewership. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. You know, we're having a blast here, and we're glad you guys are getting some enjoyment out of it.
Consistent viewership, even with Pat taking a piss break and my camera breaking. So thank you guys for hanging out.
I have to piss
guys,
again, by the way, but...
I'm sure I do, too. Look, we record for an hour and a half. That's how it goes. Guys, thank you for tuning in. Enjoy week one of NFL football, and we will be back here reacting to a full slate of games. God, that feels good to say. For Pat Gustafson, I'm Brandon Carney, and we will see you guys after some football has been played.
Bye-bye.